Hello, my name is Adrian Goldberg and welcome to the Byline Times podcast. The Byline Times, it's what the papers don't say, what radio doesn't report and what telly doesn't tell you. This time, Vote Watch, a new Byline Times campaign to ensure that the upcoming general election is both free and fair. We want to hold political parties of all stripe to account by making sure that the rules around voting and donations are observed and to identify those trying to unduly influence the outcome of the ballot, whether through bots on social media, artificial intelligence, or supposed grassroots campaigns that are in fact a front for one undeclared interest or another. It's an issue which has been brought into sharp focus recently by changes to rules around voting eligibility and election finance, which have led the Labour MP Dawn Butler to say she fears the Conservatives are trying to steal the next election. A new strategy document set out for the Electoral Commission has also roused fears that ministers might be leaning on this supposedly independent voting watchdog. So we want you to act as our eyes and ears in the months ahead. And there's a crowdfunder too, so that you can help support our work. I've been talking to Byline Times chief reporter Josiah Mortimer and first Byline Times editor Hardeep Matharu. Why does she think Vote Watch is so important?
It's a really big year for elections around the world, but I think it's a really big year for democracy. And I think in Britain, we're really complacent about democracy. We like to tell ourselves that we have the mother of parliaments. There's no notion that what's happening in countries abroad, political corruption, any of that touches us. But I think that complacency is what makes us vulnerable. And it's not just complacency, it's also actions that have been taken by the government we've had over the past decade that have been concerning steps in the wrong direction in terms of democracies. As you mentioned, we got, for example, the Electoral Commission, which is the elections watchdog. It's in effect lost its independence. Its strategy is now set by the government. We had the introduction of voter ID, which fuels massive concerns about how many people that's going to lock out of the ballot box. Its justification that it's trying to reduce cases of fraud is very questionable because the cases of fraud are extremely small to begin with. Then you've got, for example, recent increases in the donation and spending reporting limits for political parties. That, in effect, is going to see so much more money flooding into British politics. And on the question of money and where it comes from in British politics, it relies on private donations. And so, for example, it's still the case that a company that's registered in the UK can donate to UK political parties, but the donation doesn't actually have to have derived from profits generated in the UK. Then we have many more British citizens living abroad. The time limit, I think it was 15 years that they could vote in elections, that's been lifted. That's going to see potentially millions of people who are now living abroad who are going to be voting in our elections and be able to donate to political parties. So I think we've really seen a push towards a watering down in the democratic norms and the rules that we have always relied upon. And I think Vote Watch is very much needed. It's also about the political culture that we've seen toxify in recent years. So this very much isn't just a campaign which will be tracking those on the right and the sort of tactics they'll be using online, offline, in constituencies. It will be looking at political parties as a whole and the environment in which they have to operate in. It's really interesting to me the extent to which the opposition parties will also feel they have to engage in social media adverts and quite rigorous campaigns to get their points across. So it's really not only honing in on the examples of where we can see corrupting influences coming in as we run up to the election, but also trying to stand back at the end of this and look at political campaigning and democracy as a whole and where we've got to with it in the UK.
And Josiah, I know that our colleague Adam Bienkoff recently reported on Byline Times, an astonishing statistic that around 10 million voters don't know that they will need photo ID in order to vote in the upcoming general election. That's serious enough, but there are concerns that the introduction of photo ID effectively will bar members of some generally underrepresented communities in terms of voting.
That's right. This was something that was warned about from the very start. And indeed, while the Elections Act, which introduced this, was going through Parliament in 2022, there are about 2 million people who don't have the kind of ID that the voter ID rules require. So we're talking about a strictly limited number of photographic identifications that can be used to vote. And if you don't have them, you'll be turned away. Now, the government says there is a free ID. I was going to say card. It's not card, actually. It's a flimsy bit of paper that local councils can send you if you lack the right kind of photo ID. But the uptake of that last year in the local elections was really, really low. And we do know that 14,000 people, more than 14,000 people actually, were turned away and didn't come back to vote in those local elections. You know, we're not talking about UK-wide elections here. We're talking about 14,000 people in a much smaller number of local elections in England. So scale that up to a general election, and I think we're looking at essentially up to 100,000 people who could be effectively denied a vote this year. So voter suppression is going to be a big part of this Vote Watch project, partly because we've reported a lot on it at Byline Times, but also just because, frankly, it's something that not a lot of other outlets have really put much focus or attention on. And we think it is a really significant change in British democracy. We hear a lot about US voter suppression, you know, Republican playbook kind of keeping certain voters they don't like out. But as Hardeep said, we're often loath to think that those sorts of tactics could come to the UK. And I think part of our coverage this year will be actually showing this is a real risk here, and here's what we can do about it.
It's quite a revealing admission by Jacob Rees-Mogg, former minister, of course. He said at a meeting of the National Conservatism Conference that the voter ID scheme, effectively, he admitted that it was an attempt to gerrymander the election. He did say that he thought it might backfire on the Conservatives because actually it's often older voters who aren't aware of the requirement for photo ID. But the chairman of the Electoral Commission has said that there are also other groups who are effectively at risk of being disenfranchised from voting.
And let's bear in mind, he was a minister at the time the Elections Act was going through. Yeah, I think they did reveal a lot, actually. I mean, it was one of those cases of saying the quiet part out loud, you know, where governments kind of admit to what was really behind their thinking when they passed legislation. You know, often they do present these sort of lofty goals that they're safeguarding the integrity of democracy. But like in Republican states in the US, it's often not too hard to see what the real intention might be behind some of these rules. So that has been a really major development, I think, and one that's been largely underreported on, I think. And as you mentioned at the start, we've got these new strategy for the Electoral Commission. First time our independent elections watchdog has been sort of directed by the government to do things differently. We've also got a massive hike in election spending rules this year. The government's hiked the election spending cap up by 80%. So now they can spend £35 million in the election campaign. And funnily enough, only the Conservatives have that kind of money that we know of. They're far outraising the Labour Party, I think by about £10 million in the last quarter alone, according to the latest Electoral Commission stats. So it does look quite cynical when you put all of these things together. And then, of course, another big shift Hardeep touched upon, an extra 2 million potential voters on the electoral roll this year after the government scrapped the maximum time limit people could vote while living abroad. They can also donate sums to UK political parties and organisations. I think another thing that often gets missed in all of the talk about political spending and elections is that there isn't actually a cap on donations to political parties in the UK. All of these things, I think, are not quite as well known as they should be and actually do ring quite a lot of alarm bells for those of us who care about the state of democracy.
I just want to talk about the new Electoral Commission strategy that you've touched on here, because this is something that the House of Lords has rebuked the government over. It's something that the Electoral Commission itself, and I think this is pretty unprecedented, has been briefing against the government on, fearing that its independence is being compromised. So what exactly have the government done, and why do critics fear that it will mean the Electoral Commission is no longer independent?
Yeah, so as part of the Elections Act, which introduced mandatory photo ID for elections, The government also imposed what was widely branded a power grab on the Electoral Commission. The government allowed itself to appoint new members to the Speaker's Committee in Parliament, which oversees the Electoral Commission. That is the body which the Electoral Commission is accountable to. So the government now has a controlling vote on that committee. The government can also now basically write the strategy for the previously independent elections watchdog. So they have what's called a strategy and policy statement that was passed in the House of Commons, basically on party line votes, no Tory rebels, Labour against, no attempt to find cross-party scrutiny. And yes, the government has basically told the Electoral Commission things that they should do. Now, government ministers were very keen to insist that not a lot will change. The Electoral Commission, they're free to act day to day as they kind of see fit. But a lot of backbenchers and opposition figures were saying, well, if this isn't going to change anything, then why do it? When you read the fine print of that new strategy for the Electoral Commission, which we've published on Byline Times, you see that, for example, there's over a dozen mentions of voter fraud, of which there were just a handful of proven cases over the past decade, but only two mentions of donations to political parties. And donations to political parties are something that the Electoral Commission does actually have powers over. And of course, the government is itself regulated by the Electoral Commission. Political parties are regulated by the Electoral Commission. But those government ministers are now writing the strategy for their regulator. And I thought a peer was really interesting, Lord Chris Renard, when he said in the debate, it's a little bit like giving GB News the power to set the strategy for Ofcom, the media regulator, or Thames Water, the power to write the strategy for Ofwat, the water regulator. The government is now at the driving seat for what was previously an independent elections watchdog. And I think for a lot of people, that looks like an overreach, a conflict of interest, essentially.
We should point out, in fairness, that Simon Hoare, who is the local government minister, has insisted that the government strategy does not undermine the commission's independence. Hardeep, over the coming weeks, we're going to be encouraging our listeners and our readers to send in examples of what they suspect may be nefarious activities by all political parties in the run-up to the election. You've touched on one of them when you mentioned astroturfing earlier. Just so that people can understand what astroturfing is, just give us a little example of that.
Yeah, it's a term you need to get your head round to understand, but then it's quite easy and striking the extent to which it's happening. So astroturfing, in simple terms, is when organisations pop up and they look like the grassroots organisations, so consisting of campaigners, experts on a particular issue, forming an organisation in order to campaign. But really what they're doing, they're just channels in order to launch money into politics. Sometimes they complete policy papers, publish them, create talking points around certain things. But astroturfing is one of the ways in which questionable money can enter British politics. And again, that's legal. There's nothing to stop unincorporated associations, as they are called in the UK, from donating to UK political parties. As long as they've got a base in the UK, there's no obligation for them to check the sources of donations that are coming into these unincorporated associations. As Josiah said, there's no cap on how much you can donate. The money doesn't even have to be generated in the UK. So astroturfing is an interesting one. We've seen a bit of activity around that recently when it comes to the National Trust, for example, a campaign that was being waged in order to change the membership of its board, claims that it had become too woke and that the agenda of the National Trust had gone too much towards pointing out its sort of colonial history and issues of diversity. So astroturfing is one big area. I mean, good old social media ads. We want everyone to keep their eyes out on what is being put out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, what kind of claims are really being made. Leaflets masquerading in local constituencies as newspaper front pages. Josiah has done a great job in the past of documenting when they're popping up and why. I also think something that, again, isn't readily thought about, but I think it's going to be such a big problem, is AI. And so Rishi Sunak, world leaders, and the media too likes to focus on this notion of robots are taking over and this is the big threat coming from AI. It's all going to be about our working practices changing and what are we going to do about it? There's next to hardly any discussion of the impact AI is going to have on democracy. So if we think that social media platforms and political ads and micro-targeting of people and it is a problem, which we've seen on Twitter and Facebook in previous elections, which is going to ramp up in this election, AI is almost a different ballgame. It's really a massive development of that. We've already seen deep fakes, videos purporting to show public figures orchestrated to say different things, or films are being doctored to show them doing different things. So they're popping up all over the place. Keir Starmer has been the subject of one of those. So there's a lot we have to get our heads around, not only in terms of what is legal within the UK political system when it comes to donations, when it comes to political advertising, all of these things, but also I think some of the newer tactics are going to emerge that we all need to get our heads around. And so we're interested in any information about any of these. We want to be investigative in our approach. So we do want to try to shed new light, new insights. We want to be impactful in that. The reason we're doing it is because we hope we can provide a check or a safeguard on some of these tactics that are going to be used that perhaps other publishers in the media are not going to be focusing on. So we really want to try and do that. And in the name of democracy, we do want to involve citizens. That's what it's about. You will be our eyes and ears. We have a small in-house team, as we always do, to look at the details of it. But we really do need everyone on the ground in various social media platforms to look at what might be concerning. And if you think there's more to it, then do get in touch. And that's how we engage people. That's how we sort of take back a stake in our democracy. It's something we all have to be vigilant about. It's something we all have to feel matters to us. And I think it is extremely worrying the direction we're going in. It really, really is. And we can't just let ourselves slide into that.
Yeah, two deep fakes, I think, involving Keir Starmer. One in which he is purporting to support an investment scheme, and the organisation Full Fact has debunked that. There was another one released, I think, on the opening day of the Labour Party conference, which again purported to show Starmer swearing at one of his junior members of staff. Again, another deep fake. So this technology, sadly, is here, it's now, and it's with us. So if people want to get Byline to explore, to investigate potential misdeeds, whether it's around election spending rules, whether it's around astroturfing, how can they get in touch with us? What should they do?
Yeah, so currently you can view our Vote Watch project campaign launch at subscribe.bylinetimes.com/VoteWatch. We're really excited about this project. We think it can have some real impact. And we're really excited to be working with all of you who are going to be our eyes and ears on the ground. So come join us.
Brilliant. Your chance to make an impact on the election and on the Byline Times. Thank you very much indeed, Hardeep. Thank you to Josiah.
And that address again to support our crowdfunder is subscribe.bylinetimes.com/VoteWatch. And if you see something in the run-up to the election that you think might count as sharp practice in terms of trying to inappropriately influence the vote, then do email votewatch24@bylinetimes.com. That's votewatch24@bylinetimes.com. I'm Adrian Goldberg. This has been a We Bring Audio production in Birmingham for the Byline Times by me and Harvey White. We'll see you again very soon. Thanks for listening. Cheers now. Ta-ra.